Like, I don't really care about taking in more. I just only care about taking in the most important, highly leveraged piece of information. And my brain will always find that. And I trust my brain to do that. My brain doesn't have the capacity for negative news and all the stuff I'm interested in. I think you'll serve the world better by focusing all of your attention on the things that you care about.
We stand today.
This is Method
with a shout out.
The Business Method.
The Business Method Podcast.
The Business Method Podcast featuring Chris Reynolds. Entrepreneurs, systems, methods, tools, and tactics for location independence.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, people of all ages, welcome to the Business Method Podcast, where we examine the different methods, tools, and tactics of high-performance online entrepreneurs and high-caliber people in a series format. Our first series, we interviewed 100 entrepreneurs in 100 days that had built businesses creating $100,000 or more annually. On our second series, we are interviewing 100 entrepreneurs that have built location-independent businesses that generate $1 million or more in annual revenue. There is a growing movement of people building these caliber of businesses, and we wanted to get behind the minds, the logic, and the science of what it takes to build a business like this. We've had some incredible guests like Bobby Edwards, the founder of Squatty Potty, who built a $35 million per year company with just 17 employees, and JP Sears, the YouTube superstar whose videos are going viral all over the internet. I'm your host, Chris Reynolds, and we hope you enjoy the show.
The Business Method.
What is an essentialist? It's a buzzword in entrepreneurs' circles around the world today, and the book Essentialism by Greg McKeown has been changing the way entrepreneurs tackle business and life. Essentially, an essentialist is a person that prioritizes his or her life, focusing mainly on the essential things. Now, that can vary from person to person, but even Bruce Lee said it's not the daily increase, but the daily decrease. Hack away the unessential. Today's guest is a natural and master at essentialism. Dan Schwartz has been on the show before, but we invited him back after he posted on Facebook about how he dissects and chooses to live as an essentialist. When I read it, it blew me away, and we reached out to him immediately to interview him a second time on the podcast to talk about this post and to dive deeper into the study of essentialism. Let's hop into the show.
Entrepreneurs, systems, methods, tools, and tactics for location independence.
Live from San Diego, we have Dan Schwartz on the line. How are you, Dan?
Hey, hey. Thanks for having me, Chris. Doing well.
Thanks for coming back on the show. And for the listeners, we had Dan on our very first series of 100 podcasts in 100 days with $100,000 entrepreneurs and higher. And we welcomed him back for the 100 episodes of seven-figure location independent entrepreneurs, because Dan recently wrote a post on his Facebook group called Freedom Shapers. And the post inspired me so much, I immediately sent him a message because I wanted him to come back on the show and talk about it. Now, it's on the subject of essentialism. I just finished a book a few months ago, Essentialism, by, is it Greg McKeown that wrote that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm guessing that book probably inspired you too.
Yeah. Tangentially inspired me. I think I was already heading in that direction. But that book definitely hammers it home, and I guess Greg McKeown kind of owns that word, essentialism, and there's a lot of great tips and tactics in that book to help other people realize that mentality as well.
Yeah, I highly recommend it for any entrepreneur or anybody that wants to see the world in a different light and find a new peace of mind and be more productive. Powerful book.
Mm. Yes.
So I'm going to jump into your post today, and I'm going to read it, and then we'll have you do a short introduction again of who you are, and then I'm going to ask some questions about the post. So here we go.
Cool.
And we'll attach a link for the listeners to see it.
Thank you.
I am an essentialist. I don't own a car. I don't watch the news. I don't have an office. I rarely buy clothes or shop for consumer goods. I only spend money on my health and in fleeting epic life experiences like travel, activities, amazing food, music, and recreation. I don't have any social apps on my phone, so I only check social media 3 to 4 times a week on my computer. Most days I have zero plans. I only focus and execute on the most important thing and let my intuition guide my days. My business runs the day-to-day itself and is based on recurring revenue. I don't have a 401k or fancy financial situation, just checking, savings, and basic investment positions. I don't let many people into my personal life, especially negative people, so as to go deeper with the existing relationships and let new ones flourish organically. I don't talk on the phone a lot, on average 2 important business calls a week. I only respond to texts so as to avoid spam. I don't check business email as I have an assistant. I use virtual postbox to receive mail so I can travel and still get important mail. Day to day, I literally just do what I want to do at any given moment and trust myself enough to only want positive things. All this comes at a cost. I often feel isolated, disconnected from the world, and blissfully ignorant, which is often perceived as apathy or selfishness. I sometimes feel misunderstood, and I often feel a sense of guilt for not doing more with the freedom that I have, almost an unfulfilled sense of obligation that's followed me around my whole life. Even after big accomplishments, I accept that. I accept myself in these decisions. Luckily, I don't care what people think or how weird all these decisions may seem to the majority, as I've surrounded myself with people like you all that normalize the concept of living life on your own terms. Badass. Perhaps it's an experiment in finding the edges of what freedom means to me, so that I can share these lessons with others who seek to explore what freedom means to them. I believe we are all at the apex of human civilization, billions of years in the making. I believe that with technology and increased interconnectedness, we are entering a period where billions of additional people will begin to realize this potential for freedom as well. I am willing to fight for this. Above all, I fucking love my life. I realize this freedom gives me the capacity to serve the world in big and exciting ways. I accept the different seasons of my life, the ebbs and the flows. I feel a calm before the storm, something big brewing, and I'm excited for what this upcoming spring season of life will help me manifest. I'm insanely grateful for the lightness, peacefulness, and mental clarity that comes from living free from a lot of the shackles of modern day living. I wish more people choose less over more, the essential few versus the trivial many, the 80-20 of living an epic life. We are all blessed to live in the conditions that allow us to shape our lives as we wish, to choose how we want to be, feel, and show up in the world. So fucking blessed. I'm grateful for you all for reading this and being part of this group. Please share more here if you haven't yet so we can learn more about you. Love your life. It makes things a lot easier. Dan. P.S. Smile more. So, when I read that, I was blown away. Incredible post, Dan. And before we jump into the meat of this post, I want you to give just a brief introduction of who you are and what you do.
Yeah, well, thank you for reading that. I actually forgot what I wrote, but that'll help kind of put things into context. There's a lot to unpack there. My name is Dan Schwartz. I am a... I'm a human, but I run a software business called Invest Refuse that helps overwhelmed entrepreneurs free up a lot of time by automating a lot of their deal pipeline. And it's basically a CRM for real estate investors. And that business is a recurring revenue-based business model. And that is what I do professionally. I live in San Diego. I live with a bunch of entrepreneurs, similar to the entrepreneur house model that Chris runs.
So you started out this post by the first phrase saying, I am an essentialist. And tell us what that means to you, Dan.
Yeah, I can't quite pinpoint why I wrote this post. I think it was just, it was building up for a while, just feeling misunderstood and thinking that I'm like a weirdo. But only because I'm surrounded by people that have similar mindsets. So it's actually like, I feel pretty normal around them. But like when I went, you know, go hang out with, old friends or, people that have more traditional lifestyles, I definitely feel a little like isolated. So I just felt the need to kind of explain, this. And I started it with, I'm an essentialist because I guess I really just only focus on what matters at the expense of everything else that most people think about all the time or partake in. And you know, over time that's shaped into in somewhat of an essentialist lifestyle. Where I just don't have the desire to put anything else on my plate that isn't going to serve me or what I'm trying to accomplish. So if that means, you know, not having to buy furniture and only renting, or, you know, just using Uber instead of having to buy a car, I'll tend to make those decisions because they're what matters, instead of having to take on additional stress or time-consuming activities that don't necessarily serve me.
Now,
I don't know, it's hard to explain.
Yeah. Now, again, for the listeners, Dan's a legit seven-figure location independent entrepreneur. I'm curious, Dan, was this a natural progression for you, or was there something that kind of sparked this life change?
It was definitely a natural progression, but it was sparked a couple of years back, most likely from the four-hour work week and the whole lifestyle design mentality, new rich mentality, where, you know, our biggest assets are time and mobility versus, you know, money.
Mm-hmm.
And how you can live an amazing lifestyle exactly how you desire to live without necessarily being a millionaire. I think the million-dollar company comes as the side product of choosing yourself and choosing to live that way.
I like that. How do you measure your time and mobility if you put that as your number one priority?
I guess I don't measure it quantitatively. I measure it qualitatively in my ability on a day-to-day basis to do what I want, and making sure that I don't have making sure that my time isn't owed to anybody at any given moment.
Mm.
So when I have a lot of requests on my time, I tend to not like that. It kind of stresses me out a little bit. Even like this call, for instance, like I was really looking forward to this conversation, but this is something like I had to like kind of work my day around this call. So I'm very cognizant of my time to make sure that.
I hope I didn't stress you out too much.
No, it's not stressful. I'm literally just chilling on the beach right now. So this stress isn't a word I would use currently. But just being cognizant of other people's impact on your time is how I would measure that. This lifestyle is kind of new for me too. It's just 2 years ago I was, you know, in a band full time, touring the country, and all of my time was dedicated towards the band. So I had this desire to sort of be able to shape my own life and make decisions and be where I want to be, who I want to be around with every single day, instead of having to be on tour day schedule, which actually led me to make the tough decision to leave the band, which was on the up and up. They're still playing and they're crushing it right now. Still to date, best decision I've ever made, because it's allowed me to get to this point in life. So I would say that actually was the one big decision that sparked my evolution to become this essentialist, if you will.
So how old is your business now?
We launched it in February 2016. So
okay.
2 years.
So did you have this structure when you started building the business? Because I know a lot of entrepreneurs, first couple of years, they hustle really hard, right? I'm curious to how you maintained your structure during the early days of the business.
Yeah, I definitely hustled really hard to acquire customers and hustled really hard to find people to fulfill the service and product for customers. So I honed in on my strength, which is communication and customers, not necessarily the fulfillment or the service of the customers. And I knew that going in, that my time was best spent primarily focusing on customer acquisition and just using, you know, my skill set as a leader or CEO type to rally people around me to help with customer service and customer support, so that I can focus on what I'm really good at. So right from the start, I made it a point not to do stuff that I'm not good at. And that's developed into a, now we're like a 14-person company.
That's amazing, man. I think I could use some coaching from you, actually. I have this mentality, and I don't know, it's just, I think it's from, you know, childhood or whatever, but like my mom's family are farmers, and so their lifestyle is wake up at sunrise and work all day until dusk. It doesn't mean if you like to do it or dislike to do it, you just do it. And I think I picked some of that up. So like in my business, a lot of times I find myself, oh, you know, this may take a couple hours. I hate doing it, but it's just a couple hours and I'll muscle through it and it's over. When I read Essentialist, like it was huge for me. It was like, you know, so powerful. And anyway, if you ever start coaching, yeah, man, I might be your first client.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I'd be happy to break down what you're doing right now and help you scrap some stuff that you don't need to be doing.
I appreciate it. So you don't have a car, and I don't have a car either, but it makes sense for me not to have a car because I'm in a different country every 2 to 3 months.
Yeah.
But you don't have a car, and you're based in San Diego at the moment. So I'm curious, have you ever figured out the annual or monthly cost of your transportation compared to like owning a car?
Yeah, I averaged it out, actually, how much I'm spending on Uber per day compared to what it would cost for me to own like a Tesla. And
Tesla, good.
it's close. I mean, it's close. Like the cost to just Uber versus owning a car,
yeah,
is marginally less than it would cost to own a car. But my mobility, my stress levels, and the time and extra costs of having to maintain a vehicle, getting gas, finding parking, and all of the extra stresses that go with owning a car, mm-hmm, make any difference in cost. Like I value all of that more than saving $1,000.
And so with those additional costs, it's would be then actually cheaper, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. It's definitely cheaper monetarily, if not break even.
Yeah.
But the, you know, the opportunity costs and the unspoken costs of having the burden,
right,
make it really worthwhile. If, sure, there's moments where I wish I had a car because I do like driving and cruising.
Yeah.
But there's technology. You just pull up Turo, which is a great app. I can rent a car for $40 and cruise the coast all day if I wanted to.
Yeah.
Or go on a week trip with the car. Like, so, and with Turo, they'll just deliver the car. So I'll like, if I want to drive somewhere tomorrow, I'll just order the car on Turo and have them deliver it to my house so that when I wake up, I have a car.
That's awesome.
So it's like, yeah, the technology exists right now to live exactly how you would wish to live.
Do you know, is Turo just a US-based app?
I think it's actually international.
Is it okay?
Don't quote me on that.
I haven't checked that out yet, but I'm going to.
Mm.
The next thing, I think we can touch base on it. You mentioned you don't have an office. So where are you doing the majority of your work? And tell us, how many hours per week on average are you working?
So the majority of my work. So work can be defined as making decisions around investor views at this point, or my career, or any money-making endeavor. And most of that work is conversations. So it's just conversations or sending boxers to my team, the occasional email or Slack message. So total work time, I would probably put at like maybe 10 hours a week. Or like 20 hours if I'm really hustling and I have to write a blog post or do more things that require me to sit down and like type stuff. But if you really should think about work in terms of the time it takes for you to create the output needed for making money or revenue generating activities, as I like to call it. Most of what people do are not revenue generating activities. They're just 100% time wasting activities.
Wow.
That aren't going to really affect your bottom line. And the ability to determine what those revenue generating activities actually are, like the physical actions that you're taking,
okay,
and just getting really good at that will skyrocket your income. So it's different for every business. For me, it would be like having a conversation with an affiliate and scheduling a webinar to promote to their list.
Right.
That's a revenue generating activity. Maybe even dialing that in even more. I don't need to be scheduling it. I could be creating a system for my assistant to be scheduling those so that I can focus on the actual revenue generating activity, which is doing the webinar and selling the offer. So imagine if you thought like that, how much more money you would make.
Absolutely. Do you have any other tips for people to recognize whether they're, I think sometimes, because we have so many different types of businesses and business models out there, sometimes it can be challenging for people because they're in their own paradigm at the moment.
Yeah.
Do you have any tips for people to recognize how, if they're actually doing a solid, sincere revenue generating activity as opposed not?
Yeah. This just came to mind. Work backwards from the second you receive a payment. What are the steps that happen if you were to work backwards? That's a good way to kind of pinpoint that, and build systems so that the things you do are closest to when a payment is sent. I don't know. It's kind of an abstract way to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Talking to customers and asking for money is by definition a revenue generating activity. So making sure you're talking with the people that you're looking to serve instead of doing things to like walk around talking to customers, which a lot of people do. They'll do everything but the thing that will actually lead to a relationship or a potential client. So being in direct communication with the people you're serving and then working backwards from the moment a transaction is made to make sure that that's where you're spending most of your time and eliminating a lot of the upfront stuff.
So you really have no social apps on your phone?
I have Twitter because I follow a lot of cryptocurrency people, because
mm-hmm.
that's an interest of mine. So I only do it just because I'm interested in it. I never actually post on Twitter. I just use it as a newsfeed for what I'm interested in. I don't have Facebook on my phone because I haven't made really, there's not one positive thing has happened in my life because of Facebook.
Except this podcast, right? You posted it.
Exactly. Like, it's great for community building. It's great for business.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else, not so much. You know, I'll just call my friends if I want to share something with them. Instagram, I recently deleted. And yeah, I still have Facebook because it's important for modern day living, but I only have it on my laptop and I'm very rarely on my laptop. So,
does your business have Facebook and Instagram and everything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Business has Facebook, not so much Instagram because it's business to business.
Yeah.
But my team manages a lot of the community management around that.
Now, every night before I go to bed, every week what I do is I schedule out my week roughly, and then every night before I go to bed, I make like three most important tasks to accomplish the next day. And you mentioned most days you have zero plans.
Yeah.
How does that process work for you?
I trust my brain to kind of execute what it's supposed to. Which is weird. Like, some people will be like, hell yeah, like that would be totally me. I totally understand if that isn't you and that you need to have stuff written down and you need to have a plan for that. It's a personality type thing, right?
Yeah.
For me, I just like the whole go with the flow. You know, the good shit sticks. Like, I don't take notes when I read a book. I just trust that my brain is going to let the most important thing stick in my brain.
I like that.
And it usually does. Some people might scoff at that and be like, oh, if you take notes, if you use a pen and it's better, your brain will take in more. Like, I don't really care about taking in more. I just only care about taking in the most important, highly leveraged piece of information. And my brain will always find that. And I trust my brain to do that. It sounds incredibly inefficient, but I would argue that it's more efficient.
Right.
Day to day, sometimes I'll write down, like, yeah, tomorrow I got to get this blog post out, or usually sometimes on Sundays I'll write an Evernote doc of the things that I would like to happen this week that will make this a successful week for me. And that'll just be like five bullet point items. And then I'll look at it every now and then during the week. But there's really no structure to how I schedule my days. It's just I'll wake up, I'll check in with my team. I'll do whatever I need to do to propel the business forward. And by doing that, by structuring my days that way, it forces me to only do the most important thing. And it's more of a art than a science.
Yeah, I love it, man. You mentioned no typical 401k, just checking, savings, and basic investment positions. Can you share a little bit about what type of investment positions you choose and why?
Yeah. So I'd say my business is the biggest investment. I seeded the start of my company. So the equity I have in my business is a large portion of my net worth. I have basic cash positions and checkings and savings, and I have a significant amount in cryptocurrency as well, because I believe in the underlying technology, even though it's at an a huge dip right now. I don't really care about the price so much. I'm a big believer in the technology of, you know, the internet of money that is cryptocurrency. And so I have basic positions in that I just placed, and I'm not looking at it. I'm just kind of holding on, hodling, as they say. As I get more income, though, I'll probably diversify more into real estate and into, basic index funds. But nothing fancy. Like, investing should be mainly passive.
You mentioned you don't let many people into your personal life, especially negative people. So I'm curious, what type of criteria do you hold for the people that you do allow in your life? And are they family, friends, etc.?
Yeah, well, family is always family. I'll always have family in my life. Friends and peers, I would say I only really relate to growth-oriented people. So I tend to gravitate towards growth-oriented people, and they tend to gravitate towards me. Whether that's entrepreneurs or anyone who believes that life is better lived in pursuit of constant improvement. So those types of people, I don't really discriminate. I go to a lot of events, try to meet as many people as possible, but I'm naturally introverted, believe it or not. So I prefer solo time, and I prefer solo time because I know that the more time I spend, you know, in isolation, the better I can serve people when I'm around them. That's just kind of the introvert way. And yeah, I just like, the brain can only handle so many relationships.
Right.
Right. It's hard to keep track of like being a social butterfly and having hundreds of people. Like, I don't want to forget people's names. Right. So I just want to make sure like people close to me, I know their name and I know who they are, and that I can have deep connections with them. If it gets to be too many people, then it kind of waters down my existing relationships. That makes sense.
How do you define a deep connection with those people that are in your life?
That's a good question. I would say emotional involvement. Like, I care about them. I care about their success. I understand what they're going for. And they understand and appreciate me as well. So it's just, and it's also, it's kind of like whoever's within a 100-meter radius of me, like, will naturally just be closer with me because I see them more often.
Yeah.
But it's a great question. And I think that's an important one for people to define. I don't have the answer. I'm not a relationship expert or anything, but you know, in your gut when you have a close connection with someone or not.
What are some ways that you cultivate those relationships? Things that you guys do together, ways to keep that connection alive and strong?
Experiences, shared experiences. It's all about shared experiences, whether you're going on a group retreat, you're traveling, whether you're in a mastermind together with someone, whether you're building a business together with someone, whether you go to an event together with someone, just doing, living life together and being present with other people are how you cultivate those relationships, more so than just like social media, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think the essentialist way of networking and cultivating deep relationships is just to create amazing experiences and partake in these experiences with other people.
Okay, back to business for a bit. Two important business calls for a week, man. How do you do it? And who are you talking to on those two calls?
Well, Thursdays are our executive team call. So me and our executive team, which is like the management level of Investor Fuse, we'll get together and we'll talk about all the projects we have going on. I'll have an opportunity to voice my opinions and, you know, start talking about maybe other projects we should be working on. Then Friday is all hands meeting where the whole company comes on, including our support team and the executive level people. And we'll go over the company stats, and this happens every single week. And it's this the rhythm that is the most productive for us and for me.
How big is your team now, Dan?
14 folks.
Okay. All remote?
All remote. Beautiful. Yep. We're all over. There's no one else in San Diego, which pros and cons to that. I do have the desire to work with a sales team in person here in San Diego. So if anyone is listening to this, resonates with what we're doing, please reach out, because I'm looking for salespeople in San Diego.
There's no other business calls you do throughout the week?
Yeah, I mean, it's as it happens. I might have a couple got a minute type of calls where I'll just talk to my CTO, business partner, John, get on the phone and just share some ideas. I also use Voxer a lot for these ideas so as to be appreciative of their time. I like asynchronous communication like Voxer. So instead of having to be present at the same time, hoping that you're going to be available, I like to just send a voice message on Voxer with my ideas and they can respond whenever is most convenient for them. That's a great essentialist tip right there.
I like
it. And, you know, I'll schedule important conversations with partners or JVs or affiliates that I need to have a conversation with. And that maybe can be a third or fourth important call per week. But on average, it's usually just our team calls and got a minute meetings and random podcast interviews and partner calls like this.
In your business email, your assistant does all of your business email.
Yep. She triages every single email. And if it's important, she'll tag me on that email. We use a tool called Front App, which is amazing for team inboxes. I'd say it's the best team inbox app. It connects to your Google Apps. And you can look at your, as a CEO, I can look at all of my team's inboxes, and you can assign an email to people. You can chat about an email underneath of an email. Like, you can talk about how to respond or reply to the email. And that's the tool I use. And she just assigns emails that are important to me, and I'll look at that at random intervals.
Now, you mentioned, so we'll dive deeper into the personal side of this. You mentioned that often you feel disconnected from the world, even though you're running a digital business and have a remote team, and you are connected, but not nearly as much as myself, who's connected all the time, it seems like. But you feel disconnected from the world and blissfully ignorant. And can you describe how that feels for you?
Yeah, so I don't really care how other people think about this anymore. It's too much weight to think about that. But I don't watch the news or anything, so I literally don't know what's going on. Like, someone told me that the government was shut down the other day, and I was just like, that's probably something I should know about, but does it really matter? No, it doesn't really matter. Some people might think that's selfish. I get a lot of that. I get a lot of, like, dude, you got to be aware of what's happening in the world type of things. But I ask them, why? Why can't I just be interested in what I'm interested about and follow that? And for me, I'm interested in science and technology, which is why I was so gung-ho about the SpaceX launch. So I'll follow that news. My brain doesn't have the capacity for, like, negative news and all the stuff I'm interested in. So it just makes more sense to me, and I accept that about myself, and I don't really care what other people think about that. But there's still that, like, you know, like when I'm around friends and family, they always make fun of me because I don't watch the news or know about anything that's happening in politics or the world, really. And I'm not alone. I know there's a lot of people listening to this that probably agree, but I think you'll serve the world better by focusing all of your attention on the things that you care about.
One part that really sparked my attention is you mentioned towards the end of the post, you believe we're entering a period where billions of additional people will begin to realize this potential for freedom as well. Yeah. And I think so too. Like, I love how you believe that we are the end, not the end product, but the product of billions of years of growing and evolution and change. And you mentioned on the last part of that paragraph, you said, I'm willing to fight for this. And I'm curious what you mean by that.
Yeah, I wish the capacity to shape the life as you wish on the entire world population, if I could. I think it's how we're meant to live evolutionarily, and that most people are in shackles preventing themselves from living in their true authentic selves in the lifestyle that expresses who they are. And I believe that technology is what allows me to live this way, and that it will enable more and more people to live that way, especially as technology improves and technology is democratized across the world, so that, you know, villagers in Africa will now have access to the internet, they'll be able to participate in the world economy, and they'll be able to actually shape similar lifestyles in their life. And I don't quite know how I fit into that equation, but I sure as hell will tend towards that direction as I progress along my career. And it's something that I believe in, because it's people deserve to live as they wish. And unfortunately, the majority of the world does not. And I believe it's a systems problem. It's merely a systems and technology problem. And those that are privileged enough to have access to this sort of technology and this way of life are not necessarily obligated, but we have the ability to spread that capacity to more people. And that's like a mission that I believe in. I don't have the exact solution for how that's going to happen, but if you look at what's happening in the world right now, we're about to launch thousands of satellites into space that will give billions more people access to the internet at 5G level speeds, meaning you'll be able to download movies in like a second, under a second.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. And continents like Africa will be able to bypass a lot of infrastructure building, because we're entering a wireless period, so they don't need to build power lines. They're going to just, like, leapfrog over huge infrastructure needs that we're all used to here in America. And, you know, in 20 years, Africa is going to be like a developed developed continent.
You think 20 years?
Yeah. I mean, things are going to move real quick. Things are moving quick. For those who are interested in this sort of exponential technology type of conversation, I recommend checking out Abundance 360, which is Peter Diamandis's digital community. Epic collection of resources, videos, interviews, and just really thought-provoking conversations about this type of stuff. And I'm into that.
I'm curious, Dan, what are your spiritual beliefs? And I'm sure they play into a part of this lifestyle, this thought mentality. So I'm curious, like, do you have any spiritual beliefs or practices that you're a part of?
Yeah. So I'm not religious per se, but I would say I'm spiritual. The mantra that I say all the time is go with the flow. The flow is the way, not having to force things. Like, this is it. Like, the whole concept of this is it, like, this moment right now is it. Like, you've arrived. There is no destination. You're here. This is it. Like, it's hard to really feel that, but this is it, which is why I don't really like to schedule out my days, because I just trust in the flow and the journey. I don't put too much pressure on myself if I don't accomplish something. It's like just enjoying the process, enjoying the journey. I know it's very cliche, but there's some truth to that you really need to meditate on. So I do meditate. I also go to sensory deprivation tanks. I don't know if we've talked about this on the last one or not. Sensory deprivation tanks are amazing. It really allows you to go inwards and try to find quiet in your brain that you can take with you day to day, so that you don't get stressed out and that your daily decisions are more clear with the most important things.
How often are you going to the tanks?
I do that. I used to be every week. Now I do it like every 2 weeks. It's a good meditation hack.
I tried it once and I fell asleep after about 10 minutes for an hour long. And it was a great sleep. Don't get me wrong.
No. But I do too.
Do you? Okay.
And you still get the same benefits even if you fall asleep.
Gotcha. I was a little disappointed because I wanted to be in a meditative state and go deep into the mind and have epiphanies and woke up and I'm like, oh, man.
You'll notice that most spiritual epiphanies mm-hmm. are what I just described. It's like, this is it. Like, the moment is all that matters. You have to appreciate it and be grateful for the fact that you are here and that this is your shot. This is the only life you have. You're immortal. Like, that's like the underlying spiritual message, no matter what religion you're in, maybe especially Buddhist religion, but, just go with the flow, let it happen. That's my religion.
Have you ever practiced any Wim Hof breathing meditation techniques?
No, I have a lot of friends that have told me about that. I mean, I do yoga every now and then, actually, for exercise, and yoga is all about the breath, so I understand the power in that.
Yeah, I think you'd really like it, especially if you like the sensory deprivation tanks. The breathing technique that he does helps you go incredibly deep, even deeper than regular meditation, by natural, just injecting more oxygen into our bodies. You have some pretty cool, really cool experiences. If you have some extra time in your busy week, might check it out. But don't stress yourself out with more stuff today.
Yeah. I'll check that out for sure. Thank you for that.
Hey, Dan, we're going to wrap up, buddy. Is there anything else that you would like to add about the post, or tell the listeners where they can find the post, or share about your group or anything before we sign off?
Absolutely. If anyone listening resonated with kind of my way of life, I would love to have you join the Freedom Shapers group. There's a lot of similar like-minded people in this group, and there's also a lot of good connections and business relationships getting made in this group as well. Send me an email. Send me an email to dan@investorfuse.com if you would like to be a part of this tribe, and I will add you on Facebook and we can continue a conversation there, and I'll add you to the group and introduce you to some really epic people that all subscribe to this way of life and are also working on some amazing things.
I love it, Dan. Thank you so much for coming on the show again. Thank you for spending your time and sharing your knowledge with us. And most importantly, thank you for writing that post and inspiring me and many people as well.
No problem, man. I'm really happy that you got something from it. And however I can help you, I'm all for it, man. Appreciate you having me on.
Likewise, my friend. Listeners, we're going to wrap up there. Thank you guys for joining us once again. And we'll see you all on the next episode. Goodbye, everybody. Hey, listeners, thanks again for joining the show. We wanted to remind you about our Get Shit Done one-on-one productivity coaching that we recently just launched. What we do is work with you to create big business goals that are absolutely game changers. We make a plan together and put you in our productivity hacking system that helps you stay on target. Each week, you get a call with yours truly about what steps to take for the following week. Some say it's like a year of productivity in just 3 months. Check out all the details at thebusinessmethod.com/coaching. thebusinessmethod.com/coaching.